Hello, this is January the 9th of 2021. My name is Charles Stewart. This is the conference of the Supreme Court of Law for the United States of America. The office of a Supreme Court of Law for the USA is presently vacant. We're filling that vacancy until more popular and lawful authority might claim this vacant office. We believe we've got the right to do this. We'll get into that later. We've got a busy agenda here today, and is our normal mode of procedure. Those of us that aren't big on theology and religion have indulged those of us that are, and we do like to open with a formal petition for prayer. A number of us are quite fanatical about the idea that this is a spiritual battle, and so we like to go through this process. If y'all might indulge me a little bit here, I'll go ahead and lead in this ritual that we like to go through. Champion of truth and justice in the universe, the God of Abraham, Yahweh Jehovah, Jehovah of armies, please send your angels with your Holy Spirit to guide and direct us and help us to advance the cause of your kingdom of truth and justice and peace, natural, organic, objective on this earth. That is what we seek. Please help us to achieve those ends. Please help us to comprehend that we need to be building consensus, seeking consensus, and thereunder it is of utmost importance that we attempt to maintain respectful tones and choice of words with everybody that is participating herein. And please help us to, if and when it is necessary, to divide from somebody that's obviously not seeking truth and justice, that we do so in graceful and respectful manners, and hopefully that will not even happen, and that those people will just be staying away from us anyway because they don't even like the spirit of truth and justice that we're radiating here. And hereunder, in the name of your precious Son, Jesus Yeshua, we humbly pray these things. Okay. Thank you all for joining us here. Looks like we've got a nice little group. I'm a little bit behind in my conference. There we are. Preliminary matters. Does anyone have any items that they would like to add to next week's agenda? It's too late to get on this week's agenda, but for next week's agenda. Anyone? Hearing none. There we go. Okay, I got the attendees list. I do like to see who's here. Documents. Come on. Wrong one. There we go.
Doreen, if you can, please, and this is for everyone, if you're not speaking at this time, you can use star 6 to mute yourselves, and then again, star 6 to unmute to comment or question. Just get kind of a little bit of background noise. Thank you.
Yeah.
Charles,
all right. Yes, thank you. I had a little trouble getting my documents up there just a moment. Agenda item 2B, it looks like nobody's got any new items for the agenda at this point anyway, but 2B, I would like to revisit agenda items that were prioritized in our last conference, where we were talking about the allegations of massive voter fraud, and we had resolution at that point to try to bring forth more evidence of the massive voter fraud allegations that are surrounding us. I'm personally inclined to believe that the massive voting fraud exists, but I have been stressing to try to find affidavits or sworn testimony and videos and things like that and I can't find it. And perhaps others that are concerned about this. Lots of allegations of voter fraud here. Does anybody at this juncture have any evidence that they can present before our assembly here of the actual voting fraud that has been alleged? Is there anyone
just
here?
Chris,
yes.
Well, one, there's so many different locations and different forms of election theft rather than voting fraud. The Georgia incidents where they had the fake burst pipes, sent everyone home, all the watchers and stuff, and then they commenced to pulling containers or crates of Biden votes out beneath the tables and feeding them furiously into the computers was only one instance. Supposedly, according to Rudy Giuliani this morning on War Room, Pandemic with Steve Bannon, he says on his website, I think it's Common Sense Rudy or something like that, he has quite a bit of information on his website, including affidavits and so on and so forth. There's multiples that are in court cases in Pennsylvania and Georgia and I think Michigan, Wisconsin, and perhaps even some here in Nevada where I'm regretfully at in this rogue criminal state. But those are incidences that we know of, particularly the Arizona's another one with the unqualified voters that were never vetted because of the mail-in and the drop box ruses, which were not provided for in the state legislated acts. So there are a number of different reasons and levels of fraud. Peter Navarro has a paper out called Immaculate Deception that covers six different levels of fraud that have occurred in multiple different locations. So anybody that claims that there's no evidence is either not looking, doesn't have the ability to discern the quality of the information, or perhaps has an agenda of not being able to see and being willfully blind, tactically speaking, which seems to be a disease that many of the black robes seem to be suffering from, in my estimation. With that, I'll let others chime in.
Thank you. Can I do a quick follow-up on that, Chris? I was not able to find affidavits that were sourced from the Giuliani work there. Are you certain that you saw affidavits available through Giuliani's webpage?
I did not see them demonstrated on the TV screen, but he spoke of them being available on his website. I know that Sidney Powell, her site was taken down, and there's this complete abuse of discretion by Facebook and Twitter and some of these other so-called social media accounts of taking down people who have truth up there in a truth oppression suppression operation of the highest order. In fact, they've even banned the president from being able to tweet. And, of course, then we have the compounding issues of this recent January 6th, what I am certain was a special operation. They converted and infiltrated the peaceful assembly of the Trump supporters there and infested it with a bunch of professional provocateurs under the guise of Antifa, who then committed atrocious violent acts and perhaps, let's say, sucked in some of the Trump people whenever they made peaceful entry, being invited by many of the guards working there, opening the obstruction gates and opening the doors, in fact, and becoming tour guides as they had previously done with many peaceful visiting groups to the White House, which made the special assessment or access to the building available in many different aspects of the building. It has at least four different sides that were being accessed by various different groups, some peaceful
Chris,
and some otherwise.
Chris, if I might, I think that that's a separate issue. Really, right now,
I agree.
We need to stay focused on the election fraud, so hopefully we can get through that
Well, I'm only saying that that is associated to the election fraud, and that that was at precisely the time when they were playing the Star-Spangled Banner, when they supposedly shot the Air Force veteran Ashley Babbitt. And so these things are all compounded, but they are not the primary evidences of election fraud that you're speaking to, and I certainly agree with that.
Thank you, thank you. But to bottom line, the Giuliani stuff, we don't have a web page. You know, to me, Facebook and Twitter, that's a distraction. I think all of us should know that by now, that Facebook and Twitter is a distraction. Anybody can get on the Internet and post documents. Giuliani, if he was really serious about building grassroots support for thinking reasonable people, he could post those affidavits online on a private web page and just start sending out the web links to where they are. He hasn't done that as far as I know. Do you know any difference there?
I think his website is Common Sense Revisited. I don't have
any access. Sorry, can you please repeat that?
Go ahead.
Can you repeat that, Chris? I'd like to get that website up on the screen now. What was that?
I'll look through my notes and verify. I'm pretty sure it's Common Sense Revisited is his website. But I'll look in my notes here and see if I can find it and update you here in just a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Thank you, Chris.
And if I might reply to that. Okay. I've seen, as I've said, no evidence. I've listened to Rudy Giuliani more than once. In fact, in the Pennsylvania hearing, he actually told the committee there that this was not a fraud case. And they said, well, what are we doing here? So, you know, the narratives I've heard, and they are woven into a very nice tale, but it tends to just evaporate when they're asked for any evidence. So that's where we are now. And the Sydney, that lawyer that you mentioned, Dominion actually sued her. I've downloaded the complaint. It's about 126 pages, $1.3 billion. They're suing her right now. So we'll see how, because within that complaint, they do present her false statements. It's just, again, I just got it earlier this morning, and I have not been able to review it in its entirety. But it's there, and anyone that would like that, I can send that to Charles. Charles can get that out, or in fact, I can even get it up on the screen here if anyone would like to see that. But again, it's 126 pages long, so I don't know how much we'd be able to digest on this call. So I guess this call, specifically, as was mentioned, you know, last week, was to bring forth evidence, any links of affidavit, anything, because we've all heard the narrative. So right now we're at the point of, okay, basically put up or shut up, because it's truth time. It's you know, and I know that there's some people that will obviously believe Mr. Trump over the truth, you know, and we have differences of opinion in terms of I call what happened on the 6th, the Capitol riot of 2021, and I think historically that'll be a little bit closer.
Point of order, inflammatory statement.
Michael, I think...
Go ahead, Charles.
I think...
He said some people would believe lies over Trump.
No, Trump over truth.
Yeah, there you go. Sorry. You don't know what the truth is. None of us do.
That's why we're here.
Make the proclamation,
and we ask for evidence.
Is inflammatory. You're doing the same thing you're accusing others of doing in the past. I yield.
And I would respond to that. I've just listened to Chris, who gave his opinion of those that do not believe that fraud existed. I gave mine as well. So there should have been an objection there. See, and this is what I have a problem with. Just as what happened on the 6th, that smacks of racial hypocrisy. So what I saw was an insurrection incited by a sitting president. That's what I saw. So if you're gonna make points of order for inflammatory statements, it's got to be on both sides.
Point of order. Point of order.
Let me finish my statement.
Then do it with respect.
And then go with the point of order.
Then do it with respect.
I've kept respect. You don't have the floor.
No, you haven't.
Whenever I'm talking with Cindy, you don't have the floor at this point. I was addressing Mike. So
I need a point of order.
Point of order. I believe Lewis has
to be used for interruption.
I believe Lewis has the floor here. Can we please allow Lewis a brief indulgence here? I think there's necessity of emotions are running deep here, and I don't think Lewis is being excessive in his choice of words.
And that was Lewis? All I had to say. That was it. That I was just responding to that. I believe that statement was from Chris. So with that, I yield the floor. Thank you, Charles.
Lewis's point, I certainly respect his opinion, and I certainly agree with questioning Mr. Rudy Giuliani's veracity, his honesty, and his ethics and morals and scruples because of the 911 situation where he was tantamountly untruthful and contributed to that deception on the American people. So I think anything he says has to be taken with a grain of salt also. Although I do take a little bit of exception that I think if you actually listen to what Trump said, most everything he said, as opposed to what's been shown on television and the lamestream media that are adverse to his position, he always pre-qualified it that he wanted to have peaceful protest at the Capitol, and I'm not sure that's inciting insurrection in that fashion in the nature that I understand insurrection, but I really respect Lewis's opinion. I appreciate his contributions.
Thank you. And there's a lot of emotions that are natural here, and if we can just try to navigate around each other's sensitivity zones, I think we'll be able to get through this, and please try not to escalate the intensity of the tones and the choice of words unless it's absolutely necessary. Michael or Cynthia, did you all have any evidence to present in support of our agenda item here or against it or anything like that?
I've chosen not to waste my time. There are others in the courts right now that are presenting evidence, and I'm going to wait and see what they achieve. I don't believe they'll achieve anything, even though the evidence is there. The courts are totally corrupted, infiltrated. We've seen this. We've been denied in the courts time and time again. The president was told he didn't have standing by the Supreme Court. I feel we're in a very serious, troubling time, and I'm not going to waste my time on this issue. I'm going to table it for another day, another time. I yield.
Okay. Paul Nally also had a dog in this fight. Paul, are you with us here?
Oh, yes, sir. I am hanging on every word.
Well, thank you for bringing a less inflammatory tone to the whole conversation. Maybe you could help us to kind of navigate through this and maybe even put a wrap on it, whatever you think is best here. Paul, go ahead.
Thank you, Charles. I would make this observation. It appears that even in this group, there are those who tend to confuse their emotions with rational thought processes, the Socratic, as it were. And I would also like to remind each one here that our own emotional content that we bring to the things that we see and hear on the news media tend to add a color, a flavor, if you will, to the information that is being presented to us. But I would adjure each one here to understand that as sitting members of the board of directors of these two large corporations, we are obliged more to ourselves than anyone else to consider carefully and to weigh carefully the evidence being presented. That is one of the reasons why the language of our petition to the federal grand jury was couched in non-political or non-partisan tone. Basically, what we are saying is, one, we are seeing and hearing things that are evidentiary in nature, but we have no direct proof of any of it. Now, that applies to most of us. I will say that there are several on our on our list of petitioners who do claim to have eyewitness testimony and have rendered affidavits. And so what we are doing is we are recognizing the fact that as a matter of law, we do not have a sufficient understanding of the probable cause to believe either that crimes have been committed or that crimes have not been committed. And we recognize that under the law as it currently exists, there is one body and only one body in the constitutional structure, the contractual structure of this corporation, who is clothed by law with the authority not only to determine the weight, relevancy, and the sufficiency of any piece of evidence, but they are charged to go out and find and see and hear all of the evidence. And from that, make a determination of probable cause to believe that yes, this was done, or no, this was not done, and then to make that announcement to the American people. At that point in time, when that announcement is made, then everybody in the United States, every citizen in the United States, will have a reasonable expectation of having heard the truth. As best our neighbors who are sworn as grand jurors were able to discern it. That is what we are seeking. However, because of the additional powers of a legally clothed grand jury, we are apparently being obstructed. Now, I would suggest that perhaps our individual attentions should temporarily be diverted from the questions and the arguments surrounding whether or not there was election fraud, illegal conduct in this presidential election cycle, and focus rather on the question of why are these petitioners, 44 citizens from around the nation, being denied their First Amendment right to petition, to peaceably assemble with, responsibly exercise speech to, and be heard by the most powerful governmental organization in our Constitution? And with that, I think I better yield.
Thank you, Paul.
May I?
I'd like to. Let me. Then I'll give it to you, Cynthia.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to point out I do believe that the fraud that Paul, well, the obstruction of the process that Paul is highlighting here, that technically speaking, I don't like altering agenda items, but maybe it is worthy of it. But to briefly touch on it as it relates to the agenda item, the process for moving forward to back up again a bit further, there's a common law maxim that for every wrong, the law provides a remedy, and that especially goes in response to criminal complaints. And we there's another constitutional maxim that is in most state constitutions in one form or another, that all power is inherent in the people. This means that we've got the right directly to file our own criminal complaints. And even when we go through grand juries, like what Paul's bouncing up against there, it comes to a point where the ability to access the grand jury is being obstructed by criminal behavior. Okay, and when that manifests, when crime number one is obstructed by crime number two, then it's emphatically really time for us to start composing our own criminal complaints based upon our own evidence. It sounds to me like Paul's got evidence that there is obstruction in the grand jury there in the Federal District Court for Georgia. And we should be thinking in terms of a criminal complaint against the people in positions of authority in that federal grand jury in Florida. That would be the next follow-up process. In my humble opinion, we need to take the bull by the horns. Cliff was talking about in the opening discussion here about we need to be really active, not sending paperwork to grand juries hoping they will be active. We can do this ourselves. If the law is on our side, we've got the moral high ground and the legal high ground. So I just wanted to share my opinion on that. Paul might have a response, but Cynthia, you had comments too. I yield.
Yes, thank you, Charles. My comment is that I would like to apologize for my outburst. It was not in defense of Michael. I am with Michael because of the way I think. I don't think the way I do because of Michael. I have respect for Lewis, and I want to maintain that. There was double standards being spoken, and that's why I did a call. My mind is just spinning right now. A call to order. I did step over a line, and I just wanted to apologize. I yield.
Paul, yes.
Is Michael from Florida here?
Yes.
Yes, Paul, how are you?
Michael.
Yes, sir.
Have y'all done anything with your grand jury your federal grand jury petition yet?
No, I've chose to table it for now.
Let me proffer, please,
okay,
a suggestion that just pierced my mind while Charles was speaking. And that is this, that in view of the fact that you have a reasonable assumption based upon my testimony, that the grand jury has gone over 30 days and not acknowledged our pleading in any way, I would ask you and your group to consider filing a federal petition to your grand jury requesting them to inform the grand jury in Atlanta to get on with the process for which they have suffered an investigation by your grand jury. Do you understand the implication?
We've got some background noise, please, so star 6 to mute. Thank you. Go ahead, Paul.
Now, Michael, do you understand the legal significance of something like that?
Yes, I do. Would it be considered a mandamus on our part?
Absolutely. It would be a grand jury mandamus to another grand jury. And it would be done under the threat. It would be one grand jury threatening another grand jury with investigations under 18 U.S.C. 241 and 242. Can you imagine one grand jury, one federal grand jury in this nation returning?
Is that
in
deprivation? Deprivation?
Conspiracy and deprivation.
Okay.
241 and 242. Oh, man. Now, you talk about creating legal history. That, to my knowledge, that has never been done in the entire annals of the grand jury, back to the Magna Carta.
That's interesting. You do bring up a valid
no,
point.
I didn't. Charles did.
Well, if I might jump in here.
I missed that. I'm not sure what you're referring to. I just know that I think having us make a complaint to our grand jury about your grand jury not listening and mandating them to listen is an excellent idea. I yield. Go ahead, Charles.
Well, I'm sure the proposition is well intended, but we're getting now we're two steps away from directly prosecuting a criminal. We have no formal criminal complaints before grand jury number one. And the complaint that Michael would be bringing to his grand jury to investigate the first one probably wouldn't be based on a criminal complaint being presented to the second grand jury. And so I can't help but think that we're getting farther away from our goal rather than closer to it, as if we were just doing criminal complaints based upon our own knowledge ourselves.
Charles, if I may, why would you claim Paul has no criminal complaint?
I haven't seen it. I would certainly have seen it by now. Paul would have presented it to me. Paul, do you have a criminal complaint?
Thank you for asking, Charles and Michael. May I interrupt?
Please.
Yes.
Thank you, Charles and Michael. I do not, at this present moment, have a typed-up criminal complaint against the federal grand jury for the Northern District of Georgia. However, within 24 hours, I can cure that problem. Now, I do not know your practice and procedure in your common law court, but if you could provide me with the rules for filing, I most certainly would be willing to lodge a criminal complaint against this grand jury. Now, you'll have to keep in mind their names, their mailing addresses are all secret. They will not be revealed. They will have to be discovered some other way. But as far as a corporate entity, yes, I can charge a specific federal grand jury with violations of 18 U.S.C. 241 and 242. Now, as I said, if you will provide me the requisite procedural rules, I will comply.
Thank you, Paul. The procedural rules are basically traditional common law due process. Once we get a complaint filed before us, we'll put it on the web page so people can look at it, because we're open and public. We're in the light of day, and then we'll just start following due process of law in conferences like this to try to build a consensus amongst 12 about what is the merits of the complaint before the court.
Thank you. I will begin drafting tomorrow morning.
Okay. Well, there's another issue here too that I was hoping to be able to communicate to you, but apparently I didn't. Is that even your first complaint before the grand jury? That was because you suspected that there was crimes committed in the vote counting process. Isn't that true?
Correct.
Okay, well, I think we've talked earlier that you'd know at least a few people that have seen things like this and that may be willing to submit affidavits in support of that. Is that true also?
Yes.
Okay, well, see, at that point, either they or you or some other volunteer could step forward to prosecute criminal complaint number one about the actual real issue of whether or not there was criminal vote counting going on here. That's where we really need to be. Instead, had one jury, grand jury, focus on another grand jury that's supposed to be focusing on issue number one. What you just advocated to Michael is issue number three. We need to be focused on issue number one and then focus on issue number two and then try to think about whether or not Michael's got a corrupted grand jury there also in Florida.
I see what you're
Charles,
saying.
Charles, if I may.
Lewis, yeah.
I mean, okay. You know, on more than one occasion on this call, I've indicated my support for Paul's petition because as I comprehend it, and Paul, please correct me if I get anything wrong here, what Paul did or what they're doing, Paul and the other 44 there in Georgia, they put forth a petition for the grand jury to investigate the alleged fraud in any state. And it was because of that, an investigation where it would be determined where either there was fraud or there was not. And then the findings communicated to the people. Now, if we were to, this body were to take on a criminal complaint of the fraud itself, then we would need someone to investigate that matter. And I don't know that we have the resources to do a thorough investigation, which is why I was supporting the effort there in Georgia. Because if you can get a federal grand jury, they've got the resources to go anywhere and subpoena any information that they need from anybody.
You are correct.
Yeah. So as such, I see that as a powerful move. I really do. Now, if this body would like to take up an action, it should be then that this federal grand jury has, we don't have to use, we can use the language of USC 18-241 and 242 without the statutes. Still, if two or more persons conspire to injure or oppress, and I think that's where we are, they're oppressing the petition or any information coming forward. So if we were to take that position, I think we would be in our proper status, our proper position. If we're looking to step in because the Georgia grand jury has failed to act, then we act then as a body that needs to hire investigators, provide volunteers that have the ability to investigate, and our resources at this time, I don't believe, are where they need to be in order to conduct a full and thorough and complete investigation. I yield for any response.
May I? This is Mike. I think the problem is the court in Georgia has failed to communicate. Their time has ran out. Is that not correct, Paul?
Correct.
So the failure to communicate their decision to pursue the inquiry or not is the liability. I see that as a clear liability. Am I incorrect, Paul?
No, you're not. And if I may interject just an
option. Yes, I yield. Go ahead.
Okay. I'll allow me to interject this. In Georgia's Title 24, which is the Georgia law on evidence, there is a provision which provides that if you receive a correspondence from someone else, then you have a duty, especially when there are allegations, but the law basically says if you receive it and you do not answer within a reasonable time. Now, reasonable time is a phrase that has been defined by the Georgia Supreme Court as a maximum of 30 days. So if you don't respond in a reasonable time, then the presumption of law is that you admit the proprieties of your correspondence. So basically what the grand jury has done is they have said to the world, under Georgia's law of evidence, you may now presume that any allegations raised in this petition to us are valid. That is basically what they have admitted to. And I think Lewis does raise an extremely salient point here about, oh me, about the expense involved in investigating. I may be out of order, and if I am, please so rule. But I'm wondering if rather than filing a complaint with the court, that this assemblage approve a resolution that the court issue its finding of fact and conclusions of law concerning the present conduct of the federal grand jury for the Northern District of Georgia. And I will just throw that out if somebody wants to formally make it a resolution in substitution of the filing a complaint.
Paul, if I may return to the floor to address your comment. How would you propose this assemblage present itself to address the court? How would we define ourselves in communicating with them?
Well, I believe that you have already defined yourselves as a common law Supreme Court of some type, some description. Is that not correct?
Okay. I was just wanting a confirmation. Okay. I yield. Thank you.
And that is correct. If I might take a moment, we've had someone that joined us about 4 minutes ago. Care to introduce yourself? I'm going to unmute your line. Actually, you're muted. You'll need to unmute at your end.
They're in Hawaii. I have a lot of background noise and I'm working, so I'm just going to listen in.
Okay, sounds good. Welcome, Tara. Good to hear your voice. I yield.
Thank you, Lewis and Michael and Paul. I had a poor connection here for a moment, too. Paul, a couple of points of confusion, but one of them is the court that you're talking about. I know you were talking about at least our court there, but there's another juncture where I was unclear about whether you were talking about our court or one of the federal courts that we're talking about trying to get a grand jury invoked through. Can you shed a little bit of light on clarifying if you're talking about getting?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, I will, Charles, and thank you. If this assemblage would like to have its voice heard, or at least seen in writing, then it can take my testimony and any of the other 44 that are petitioners with this and use our testimony in order to send a common law court order to the federal grand jury in Atlanta, instructing them that they are to proceed. There's a Latin phrase for that. It's procedendo ad justitium. And basically what your court would say to the grand jury is, y'all need to proceed to justice, which means do your job.
With all due respect, Paul,
yes.
I don't think that's in common law jurisdiction. That's not how courts work. If courts see another court, and including grand juries, doing something goofy, then the court that sees the other court doing stuff goofy has the right to proceed in the vacuum and do due process of law itself. And then once we got due process of law completed, like I'm inclined to believe that you're actually finally talking about putting evidence before our court here of actual crimes in the vote counting process. Is that correct?
Well, first let me address the procedendo, which is a common law writ that goes back to, I'm thinking it's either the 14th or 15th century.
Right.
But yes, I would be issue as to the issue of evidence, I would submit an affidavit to your court setting forth the facts and circumstances.
Do we have anybody from your quadrant, either yourself or some of your other 44 co-petitioners, that are willing to assert that the evidence here amounts to criminal behavior and you're basically your sworn criminal complaint that there is criminal behavior going on? Is anybody
Absolutely.
In your... Huh?
I will.
Excellent. Angels just appeared before me and sung a little song. That's exactly what we need, Paul, is somebody willing to stand up and say that they seen criminal behavior going on here, or else they know of it, and they have sufficient evidence they believe to prove it. And at that point, we can invoke real due process of law instead of this municipal legal fiction stuff that we're always getting entangled in.
Well, I'll have mine within 48 hours, you'll have mine. And in the meantime, I will see if some of the other 44 would be willing to send a affidavit and maybe even attach affidavits of previous affidavits that they may have filed. I understand
yep.
one of them, and I did not see this, but I understand that one of them actually appeared at the Senate Judiciary Committee meeting and did submit a affidavit to that committee. So I will see if they would send two affidavits, one of their own experience and the other of what previously happened to them.
That sounds excellent, Paul. We need some... The entire purpose of this conference and the authority that we're claiming, Supreme Court of Law for the USA, it doesn't get invoked. None of us, me, nobody, has authority to just start moving forward with a case unless we've got a sworn criminal complaint from a member of the community of good reputation. If you're willing to take the lead on that, then boom, we can all fall in behind you and say, wait a second, Paul Nally here, he's presented a criminal complaint before us. Under the Constitution, we now got a duty to administer justice in a quick and efficient manner. Justice delayed is justice denied. We can bring it straight to trial jury if we need to, or we can form another grand jury, whatever we want to do. But we can't do anything until we've got a sworn criminal complaint before us.
If I may, Charles, I need clarity on that. Because, you know, what Paul mentioned earlier in terms of one court telling another court to do their job, I'm completely in line with that. I believe that that is, in fact, the action. And then if they do not do their job, then there's a criminal action. At this point, any criminal complaint, in my opinion, would be that the whomever of that federal grand jury oppressed the rights. So it gets back to the conspiracy against rights and deprivation of rights under color of law. I'm actually in line with what Paul said. Earlier, he indicated that he does not have direct knowledge of the criminal activities, which is why they petitioned for the investigation. There are others among the 44 petitioners there that are alleging to have direct knowledge or firsthand witnessing. Correct? Am I right? So So, Charles, and the reason I'm not comfortable with saying, okay, hey, let's go ahead and move with a criminal complaint now is because this call right here was the intent of this was for anyone to bring forward their evidence that they had of any type of criminal wrongdoing. Thus far, zero has been brought forth. In fact, Mike has said that he chose to table his whatever you want to call it at this point. So right now, once again, we're talking about narratives with zero evidence on this call, which you stated last week very clearly, bring forth any and all evidence on this conference call. So I'd be much more comfortable with what Paul has suggested. Again, bringing the action in front of this body, but as conspiracy against rights, okay, because they have a press. They didn't act.
Who's
within whatever time frame.
The other grand jury?
Yes, the federal grand jury that failed to act on the petition within the required time.
Do you realize that that's issue number two, Lewis?
What are you calling issue number one?
The vote fraud.
Well, there's no evidence of that at this point.
We haven't conclusively decided that, Brother Lewis.
Actually,
no one has brought forth any evidence on this call, which is what you stated specifically last week.
Right. But at the end of agenda item two here, it's not conclusive. Just because we haven't yet presented the evidence doesn't mean that, okay, there's nothing here.
Okay, then I will withdraw that until we complete section two. I yield.
Thank you, Lewis. Thank you. Is there other? This does get a little bit complex, and so I really comprehend how people are somehow frequently failing to follow the have a clear comprehension of the process involved here. Is there other comments or questions about any aspect of what we're talking about here?
Yes, Charles.
Just so I'm clear. I'm sorry, Cliff, but if I can make this statement, just so I'm clear.
Yes, sir.
I have full comprehension, Charles. I will state on and for the record, I don't believe it, and I'm waiting for information to be brought forth to change my mind. So it is not about a lack of comprehension. It is about
right.
doubt.
Well, comprehension of the process, not of the state of affairs.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as long as we have, you know, an agreement there. With that, I yield. Cliff?
Okay, thank you, Lewis. Okay, Charles, I was bringing this up because I hear the disputes, but last time I checked, the Electoral College voted or made the final votes. Now, if there was a problem, I don't think we have the power, and correct me if I'm wrong, do we have the power to supersede the Electoral College? And I yield.
Thank you, Cliff. That's an excellent question, and it'll probably be raised again. But my position is, if you read the Seventh Amendment carefully, the rules of the common law referenced therein, whereunder the right to trial by jury is preserved, is also mentioned therein. The trial by jury process under common law is a higher form of law, and it decides issues of factual controversy about whether the evidence is strong enough or weak enough, stuff like that's factual controversy, and those facts are tried by juries. That elevates us to a higher system of law. See, what you've got there with the so-called Electoral College, and basically that college is a common law jurisdiction, but they're not following the rules of the common law as enlightened views interpret the rules of the common law. The rules of the common law really reach their apex through a jury. That's at the higher law level, and they're under because the Electoral College, their decision is a majority rule thing. That's an inferior decision. It's municipal. It's Roman Empire in its nature. It's not really following rules of the common law. A jury unanimously deciding one way or the other, or possibly a third option, would be the higher law system for deciding these issues, if that makes sense there, Cliff.
Well, to a degree, but I thought the grand jury's decisions were final, and they always has been in the past, unless they can prove that they were coerced into voting a different direction, and I yield.
May I, Charles?
Who else spoke here?
Paul.
Oh, please, Paul, jump in.
Cliff, to answer your first question, no, a grand jury will not overturn a Electoral College vote. They will simply determine whether or not that vote was fraudulently induced or not fraudulently induced. And if they find that it was fraudulently induced, they will indict those, or they should indict those, who engaged in that process. Now, if that issue is yielded by a grand jury, a federal grand jury, in a presentment, then it's going to be up to the United States Congress to figure out, what are we going to do now? To my knowledge, now, I do not know of this ever happening before. I have no record that I can refer to. Not only that, I think I can safely say that one sitting grand jury chastising another sitting grand jury has never been done. So y'all are sitting here on the cups of legal history. And if you follow through, and if there is follow through, then y'all might want to consider hiring attorneys to act as intervention between you and probably a boatload of press from around the world wanting to know, what in the Sam Hill did y'all do? What made you do that?
There are a couple. If Paul is through, I'm not sure.
I yield.
There are a couple of other issues that I think demand some attention related to the overall temper of this discussion, and I think Paul's points are valuable. Lewis and Michael are, and everybody else on here, it's very critical that we're all concerned about the lawfulness or the lack thereof. And I would point out that the construct of the so-called federal grand jury, specious as it is, has some inherent problems with the fact that they require anybody to sit on a federal grand jury to be a U.S. citizen, which I think is blatant and notorious false testimony and problematic in itself, because they appear to be inferentially testifying to their incompetence because they haven't removed themselves from the burdens of small c federal citizenship, which is an invention of Congress. Additionally, under the Federal Election Act of 1867, which is dubiously whether it's constitutional or not, and I think other minds will probably decide that, but the Electoral College being tampered with, and Pence himself being somewhat of a turncoat and Judas goat, if you will, he apparently revealed his true colors, which many of us have been highly suspect of for quite a long time. And it appears to me that since the people created the government and all the agencies thereof, that ultimately the Supreme Court that we the people form as assemblies may have more power and authority than a federal constructed so-called Supreme Court. And I think that's something that bears some meritorious examination. I'm not totally clear, but I'm pretty sure that we the people in the original constructs of the founders, at least on the 1785-87 area, is that we form the government and all the agencies thereof are under us. But I think those are issues that should be settled and are certainly in question here, and I was certainly interested in what Paul and Charles and others on this call have to say about those. Thank you very much. I yield.
May I, Charles?
Yes, Paul, go ahead. Thank you, Cliff. Chris. Thank you, Chris. Paul, go ahead.
Okay. Chris raised some interesting issues, that, and he is right. They probably should be addressed. However, I would point out, now keep in mind, I'm not talking about every other court in every state, but in the state of Georgia, you do not have to be a citizen to go before a grand jury and stand in the place of a state's prosecutor. A little tidbit of Georgia law I thought I'd throw in there.
If I might, I do think there's some merit to and this gets into, there's multiple legal, lawful arguments that can promote the empowerment of each of us as individuals. One of them is the writ of quo warranto process, which is similar to state ex rel. The terms are synonymous. And that authorizes, there's statutes authorizing the quo warranto state ex rel process to remove any public servant from office through a direct complaint that they have abused the position of their office. Emphatically, from multiple different angles, we've got the authority to bring and prosecute criminal complaints against corrupted public servants. There's others. I like the quo warranto process better, but there's a similar process talking about private attorney general. Many of you have heard that. That's very similar. I think they overlap with the quo warranto process. And so there's multiple powerful, supportive legal arguments to empower us to, as individuals, to bring forth criminal complaints. And once against corrupted public officials or corporations, which are frequently involved, that computer system that is monopolizing the voting process there. The executives in that computer company ought to be criminally accused also and take over their corporation. Anyway, there's the more important in a criminal complaint, a more important element than the court itself, is the criminal complaint from the individual, because that presents evidence to reasonable minds that due process of law needs to respond to the complaint before the court. If it's sworn before God as being true and the person's of good reputation, then that's sufficient evidence to justify the court moving forward behind the criminal complaint. The moving party, the prosecuting party, is the complaining party. And once that complaint is part of the record, and it sounds like Paul has agreed to fill that void, even if it's not his own personal testimony, he can be the chief prosecutor of the 44 and or others that are providing the evidence. And at that point, our court can follow the moving parties and adjudicate whatever is in the interests of justice. And part of the confusion, I think earlier, Cliff was asking the question there, well focused, but I think, Cliff, you may have used the word grand jury when you were addressing a more fundamental issue about our authority to proceed forward, which would be through a trial jury. Can you clarify there? Did you mean to say grand jury at that point, Cliff? Or I'm kind of thinking that I was talking about the Seventh Amendment trial jury stuff in my first response to your issue there, Cliff?
Yes. No, I was referring to the not the grand jury, but the
trial jury.
No, which one they call it? The one to make the final vote.
Electoral college.
Pettit jury.
Electoral college.
Yep, there you go. Yes, sir. That's what I was referring to. Electoral college.
Okay. I've kind of lost
track.
So
was your question, if I can just for clarity,
please.
Charles, just trying to bring a little bit more clarity to this. So Cliff, were you stating that was the question that since the Electoral College has certified the election, do we have the ability to affect it? Was that affect the election or the outcome? Was that
right?
Your question.
Right, because they're supposed to be our insurance policy to make sure, even if the votes are wrong, that they get it right. So now once they make their vote or cast their vote, we got to live with that, and I yield.
Thanks for drawing that out, Lewis. Thanks for clarifying, Cliff. I think Paul made a legitimate argument in response to that if there's fraud going on in what appears to be the Electoral College results, then that's subject to judicial review. That phrase, judicial review, is extremely powerful in anything that the municipal government does, and the Electoral College is here proceeding under authority of the municipal Roman model government. They're not really following due process of law, and the Seventh Amendment clearly infers that once we form a jury, we've got the right to try any fact, including the results of that Electoral College, because if fraud was involved, like what Paul said, the interests of justice require that fraud be neutralized.
Charles, if I may?
Paul, yes.
You just raised an interesting observation there when you said that y'all had the right to judge all the facts. You might also want to know that all juries, civil and criminal, are clothed in the common law with the understanding that they have the authority to judge not just the facts, but the law itself. So I might have to rethink Cliff's earlier question about can a grand jury or can a jury overturn the Electoral College. And with that common law concept in mind, I would have to now say, yes, they could. They could declare the Electoral College vote null and void.
Thank you, Paul.
If I may.
Michael.
If Paul is done. Paul, are you finished? Okay. The tyranny of the Supreme Court would most likely overrule the jury that would overrule the Electoral College. If I may, I really want to kind of focus on the elephant in the room here. In our national living room, we have an elephant. We've had it here for quite some time. And in more recent days, in this past week, we have witnessed this enigma firsthand, on display, in glaring glory, in its evil, evil expose. We have witnessed criminals in our courts denying due process of evidence against criminals. And we have a real problem here. No court that we form outside of existing de facto government will be heard. We can't expect what we put together in an assemblage and call it a court when the very President of the United States attempted to do just that and was denied. He was the injured party directly. It was he who had his election stolen. He made the claim, and he was denied. This is where we're at, and we need to get this reality into our brain and our soul, and I think start rethinking our strategy and do it outside the box. I can't see anything happening substantive using the same strategy. I feel that we're spinning our wheels and we have wishful thinking, and unless we gain large numbers and inundate the courts with flesh and bodies, live living bodies, we will never get any justice or redress. I would love to hear comments or opposition to that. I yield.
If I may make an observation, Charles.
I was talking. Go ahead, Paul. I was trying to talk. I had my mute on. Go ahead, Paul.
I apologize. Let me shut up and you continue.
Well, I did want to respond to Michael's points there. Thank you, Paul. I believe most of the group here is at a point where we recognize that we got to take the ball and run with it ourselves. We can't be waiting around for bigger numbers of people or something like that. And that we've got not only the right but the duty to promote justice by due process of law in response to the criminal accusations that Paul seems courageously volunteering to bring before our court. I think this is a splendid moment of opportunity, and if we stay on track, we might be able to get recognition on a national level for what our court here is doing in response to this issue of current concern.
What makes you think they're going to listen to a man-made court by some citizens?
Because I comprehend the depths and breadths of the legal, lawful chessboard upon which this spiritual battle is unfolding. With all due respect, Brother Michael, I don't think you got real clarity on the nature of the lawful authority that's in the grassroots people's hands here.
Well, I do believe there's a possibility, but I think we stand a greater chance of using the existing courts and assembling a petition and filing a complaint against their lack of communication. I don't think that us creating our own court is going to be heard. I just don't see it. I haven't seen it in the past. I've seen people go to jail for attempting it.
That's a separate issue, Michael. You're raising multiple issues. You know, you're...
Hey, Charles.
Paul, please.
Mike, tell you what.
Yes, sir.
I am going to state right here, right now, that there is a great probability that you are absolutely correct in that this could be an enormous exercise in futility. However, I would ask you to consider this. Suppose that this process goes forward. Suppose that I do file with your court a criminal accusation, or at least a tort accusation, against a grand jury. And let's suppose that the tribunal who hears that evidence renders a decision, and that decision is a well thought out and cited decision addressing the issues raised. I would ask you to consider that if that decision were publicized across the nation, I think you would find a great number of people becoming aware of the true nature they are. And I think, I don't know this, but I think that there could be a popular uprising against the status quo that does exist right now.
I believe that. But I believe we would have a greater chance at achieving that in the existing courts than creating our own.
I concur if we could get to a grand jury. But you can see, I don't know if y'all are all aware of this or not, but after that letter from our attorney got to the United States attorney's hands, it wasn't but a couple of weeks, and all of a sudden, he has tendered his resignation as an assistant United States attorney for the Northern District of Georgia for unexpected circumstances. That's all he said. Now, I'm not saying that our petition to the grand jury or that Mr. Fine's letter to B.J. Pack were the nexus of his leaving office, but one must consider what else was there to explain his leaving his office. But anyway, I do not counsel at all that we abandon our present course of conduct in the statutory, in the constitutional courts. I do not counsel that at all. But I am saying that...
And I would agree.
But I would say that if this effort were to come forward and be publicized, then God only knows when somebody reading about this case from a common law court of inquiry might get someone to be served to serve as a grand juror on a federal or a state court, and when they get there, say, "Hey, folks, get your head out of your fanny. We got a problem." And then all of a sudden, you may have 3 or 4 or 5, maybe 10 dozen. Grand juries around the country, all of a sudden taking a long, hard look at the political status quo.
All right. If I might, Paul, are you?
I yield.
Thank you. I'd like to point out that, point of clarification, Paul, again, you seem fixated on the crimes of the first grand jury. I'm bringing that before our court. I was under the impression that we were communicating about the agenda item issue of the voter fraud, that there's crimes there. I thought you indicated that you had you were prepared to bring that as a complaint before our court also. Am I miscomprehending what
no,
you're...
No, actually, I'm in my mind right now, I'm thinking doing both.
Very good. I was thinking we can do that too. And Michael may be correct. We may just splat like a bug against a windshield in regard to all this, but we got to do something, and this is something that we can do. And further, we're following due process of law in more quick and efficient manners than the de facto municipal courts do. The lawyers that see what we're doing will have light bulbs go off in their head, and they'll immediately start questioning, well, what's the foundation of all of this? And once... people realize that we got lawful foundation to form our own courts and to adjudicate nationally significant issues like this, then it's game on. Then we've got the power, or at least it's a moving ball in the court that we can affect. Right now, I'm immensely troubled by Michael's continuing proposition that we need to rely on the de facto federal courts in the name of God. I think they've proven that that's where we splat like bugs on the windshield. We never get through those. At least here, we've got a fighting chance, and we can go for the minds and hearts of the people here directly through our own YouTube videos and things like this. And at that point, we are positioned solid under the Seventh Amendment. We will produce a fact tried by a jury that basically cuts through all the federal municipal gobbledygook. If you can empower us with the criminal complaints that you're describing here, Paul, we'll be lined up for an extremely powerful legal position that can produce the profound social changes that I think we're all hoping for here. I yield.
If I might.
Lewis.
Okay. You know, again, Paul has indicated, and of course he speaks very well and can speak for himself, but earlier on this call he's indicated that he does not have the direct knowledge. So he did say that there may be others within the 44 petitioners there that are willing to submit their affidavits because they're the ones that saw or at least alleged saw some type of criminal activity. Without that, what Paul has the ability to bring forward, again, correct me if I'm wrong, is his claim or complaint is within U.S. 18, 241 and 242, the language. We don't have to quote the statutes. Okay, we're dealing with common law. And I'm in agreement also with Paul as to not abandoning what he's doing in the statutory realm. However, and you've heard me say this before, Charles, I like the double-barreled approach of both statutory and common law. Okay,
yeah.
So that's what I'd be looking at. But, you know, what Paul can bring forward, if I'm comprehending this correctly, outside of, without the assistance of any of the other 44 and their affidavits of direct witness of a crime, is the oppression of his rights with the federal grand jury not taking the petition, not addressing it in any way, shape, or form within the time frame allotted by Georgia. So with that, I yield.
So far, Lewis, you're dead on your assessment. I will be trying to bring in those individuals, though, who did actually witness, and that will be part of that for of the agenda item one.
Yeah,
I yield.
I have a question and a little contribution. Chris in Las Vegas, I am presently working on developing an information and complaint for a special federal grand jury here on public corruption because of two Title 18 U.S.C. 1117 conspiracies to commit murder on my life, along with other serious crimes and constitutional takings and it's a long train of abuses of an ADA senior myself that's not a U.S. citizen, but a Oklahoma State American non-citizen national. And I'm pretty far along on it, but it's such a complicated situation. That's why Inappropriate suggested last week, I think, on the call that maybe somebody could share the numbers with me. And what I really, truly meant to say was I would be happy for Charles to share my numbers with Paul and Michael and other astute, maybe Cliff, astute law minds on the call, that we're all tantamountly working at similar sorts of positions, but maybe on state-centric issues or federal-centric issues, as the case may be in my case. Or it's not really my case. It's a case that they fabricated against me. There are two cases that are in the news that are pretty noteworthy. The Carter Page is one that's recently been brought in the federal courts. The Roger Stone, the General Flynn, the Huizar in Los Angeles, the city councilman, maybe it's San Francisco. He was a city councilman out there that was brought up on abuse. There's the Puana, P-U-A-N-A, versus Kealoha case in Honolulu, Hawaii. In fact, I just watched a Steve Leto Law on YouTube this morning about they got 7 years on Louis Kealoha, the former chief of the Honolulu PD, and 13 years on Catherine Kealoha, who was Lewis's wife and the assistant chief district attorney for Honolulu's prosecutor's office. And abuse of discretion, including high-level members of their Honolulu PD criminal investigation unit, which I have it's substantially similar to the case of public corruption I have here in Las Vegas in my particular situation. And it's just so horrific that this is really, the whole criminal justice system has been cancerously infested with criminals, and they are preying on the positions of the people around the country, murdering people, silencing witnesses, stealing private property, homes, cars, and anything else they can get their hands on, breaking up families through CPS, CPS, DCF services, child sex trafficking and human sex trafficking and human body part trafficking. So the corruption is so insidiously deep and broad around the country that it's making it very difficult for people seeking justice to find anything through their bar court centralized Sovietized system, that it's forcing us to go outside. And so I'm considering, of course, going ahead with their process as best I can, but I think the duality of taking it into the common law realm along with the so-called federal centralized Sovietized system both have potential merits, but I'm not convinced of any real justice availability in the federal system. That's why the only hope that I see is really taking it to the court and the court of public opinion, in my estimation. And I thank you for tolerating my carrying on.
Thank you, Chris. I think you did stray a little bit off of our specific topic subject matter here, but the larger issue of the epidemic of corruption in the federal courts, you illustrated nicely, and I think that needs to be reemphasized. Because how many other people, multitudes of people, have splattered like bugs against windshields in the federal court system and the municipal, similar municipal court system of the states? Those court systems are top-down authoritarian. They do not allow individuals to bring criminal complaints themselves. You got to go through a corrupted prosecuting attorney. We're the only game in town. We're the more legitimate, as a matter of true, righteous, godly law and common law, as articulated in the Seventh Amendment. We are the more legitimate constitutional court here, and we can beat the snot out of attorneys and judicial officers that disagree with us. We can win these debates. They will be stammering and stuttering like idiots when the debate happens in the public forum. I'm really optimistic, and maybe my words are too bold, but even if my summary is double, even if we only have half the power, that's still a humongous a lot of power that we can make progress with. Comments. Did somebody else? I yield.
Charles, if you would get Chris my phone number, please.
We'll do that. We'll do that, Paul. I'll send it to him an email. I'll send you both an email with each other's phone numbers in it, if that's good.
Yeah, it is with me.
Okay. And in fact, I'll try to include Michael and Lewis and Chris or Cliff and others that are participating in this discussion, too, if there's no objections from any of those. I yield. To put a wrap on the election fraud allegations that have been before our court, I think we should keep this as an agenda item, even if Michael doesn't want to assume point on prosecuting. It sounds like maybe Paul can kind of...
If I may.
I yield. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, that's not what I said. I just said I wanted to table it for a more appropriate time, a more opportune time.
Okay.
And I think I would prefer to focus on what Paul is doing in Georgia and wait and see what happens with Mr. Favorito's case. He's a friend of Paul's. On the 15th of January, that That case has agreed to be heard regarding the machines. Is that true, Paul, the 15th of January?
That is my understanding. However, anything can happen between now and the 15th. They could, you know, a judge could go on vacation and then it gets delayed again.
That's correct. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to step on you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I yield.
Okay. And just to conclude, it does need to be recognized that 35 states through 147 different members of Congress objected to the Electoral College results. I'll repeat that. 35 states via 147 members of Congress objected to the results of the Electoral College, and it was denied, along with the President of the United States requesting his day and his due process in court was denied. Just for reality's sake, this is where we're at. This is the elephant in the room, and not to mention 20 years ago after 9/11 happened, since that time, we have had three grand jury demands by a team of six lawyers representing 3,200 professional architects and engineers with over 300 witnesses accompanied in the military, officers of all four branches and multiple agencies of intelligence. So clearly, we have a problem, and it's very, 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 very serious. And it's not time for child's play. It's time that we use the greatest strength that we have and resources that we have. And that's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to be a defeatist in our efforts, but I think we should take the path that stands to achieve the greatest results. If and then we fail, then we might want to consider forming our own court and our own militia and our own justices of the peace and town constables. But right now, I think using the existing system, which does have remedy available, there have been many proven examples of that in recent, very recent contemporary history. Remedy has been found, and that's where I stand. I'm not saying let's give up. I'm not saying abandon the town constable model that Charles has proposed. I would prefer more of calling our court a court of redress rather than or calling it a Supreme Court of redress. I think would be a more appropriate. When we try to call it something that already exists, we set ourselves up for mockery and failure in the eyes of an ignorant populace. We must remember we're dealing with ignorant sheeple by the millions.
Hey, if I might.
Yes, I yield. Go ahead, Charles.
Thank you, Michael. Ignorance is exactly our battle. And the phrase court of law is the most powerful position on the chessboard. And with all due respect, Michael, I don't think you comprehend the kind of power that's at our fingertips to invoke meaningful remedy presently. And I think you're taking the long way around when we can go direct to affecting significant change immediately and promptly in the real world here. And reliant, while the de facto courts that you're advocating that we challenge our remedies, our energies in, I think the vast majority of us on this call recognize that that is a bad idea, with all due respect.
Why don't we take
questions, Michael? You got a response? And I yield.
Yeah, I'd like to hear if others feel that way, that the existing courts, if that's a failing path, then why are we entertaining it with Paul's case?
We're entertaining Paul taking his case before us.
That's not how I understood it. That would be a secondary achievement. The primary goal and pursuit is taking it before the state of Florida and asking our grand jury, petitioning our grand jury to provide a mandamus to the Georgia court for failure to communicate. That's the injury. That's the offense that we're focusing on. I yield.
To answer Mike's question, I would be one that thinks that the common law position is the superior position. I do comprehend completely that it is often ignored. You're talking about by the ignorant populace as well as the de facto administrative courts, which is why I spoke of the double-barreled approach. But I certainly believe that as the populace becomes aware, And there's an education piece involved in that, and we, all of us on this call, are charged with educating someone, bringing someone aboard. Cliff spoke earlier about active. This is not and Charles, at our earlier conversation before we started, I think not a spectator sport. So as the populace becomes aware of their power, the sleeping giant, because they are ignorant. And as they become aware of their power and their authority over the de facto, I believe that we will grow. But in the meantime, we need to address issues now. And therefore, I suggest the double-barreled approach, not abandoning any action that's going on in the statutory realm. However, bringing that same action to our common law court. And I believe the Supreme Court of Law is the supreme position. And I've talked about this not only on this call, but our calls on Wayne County and Michigan, how we might also integrate this body and even create a Supreme Court of Law at the state level. But it takes people. It takes people, and that's where we are. And you and I, Mike, have talked about this before in terms of our numbers. So that's one thing that we actually agree on. You know, our numbers, we must grow our population, educate our population. Paul has spoken many times before about the duties or rights and obligations of the, the business trust organization, the elective franchise. Some still refer to it as a straw man. I like to leave that mystical language out of it and call it exactly what it is. And it's an elective franchise, and we need to take control of that entity and act accordingly. So with that, I would yield.
This is Nikki.
Nikki.
Yes, and I agree with what Lewis just said, but I see it from a different perspective, and that's the systemic approach that you are taking, Charles, and several people on this call, as well as the systematic one that is being, addressed by Michael, right? Yeah.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
All right. There was a lot going on there. I would like to put a wrap on this. I don't know how our time is holding. Do Paul or Chris or anybody of a dog in this fight have any concluding comments on all of this?
I'm through.
I have a question, Paul. Is the attorney that resigned that you spoke of, is that Michael Sherwin, the assistant ADA or district attorney for the USA?
No, sir. His name was B.J. Pack, and he was the attorney general for the Northern District of Georgia.
I had just read one this morning. I'm pretty sure it was on Epoch Times about this Michael Sherwin. He may have been he was the D.C. U.S. attorney that resigned there. So some of these attorneys are realizing that this dramatic abuse of the legal system and failure to do their duty, and that falls under Title 18 U.S.C. 1346, failure to provide the intangible implied right of honest services, therefore being fraudulent activity by grand juries, legal bodies, and so on and so forth. certainly has some blowback implications if the truth be known. So I think holding our so-called representatives to accountability is something of those who have attempted to remove ourselves from unbenighted ignorance is an important thing for us to do as important contributors of overall goodness of general society.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you for those comments, Chris. Is there objections to moving on to our next agenda item 2C here?
Yes, Charles. Cliff, one last time.
Yes, sure, Cliff.
Okay, now, for the record, they may be beating a dead horse because nobody to me is sharper than Trump when it comes down to maneuvering. So if he hasn't covered his own behind, I don't know what we can do to aid in that because, I mean, he's got all the lawyers, he's got all the legal books, he's got all the legal minds, and if he can't figure out how to get this thing turned around, I don't know, to me, I don't know what we're doing, and I yield.
My goodness. Can I make another observation, please?
Paul, please go ahead.
Thank you. For the record, let me state that after about a year of being in office, I was satisfied that Donald Trump, without a doubt, was the absolute best CEO that this country ever had. However, just because the guy can do a deal, make China chaff under commerce, for all of that skill and ability that he's got, he is without a doubt one of the dumbest people that ever walked the face of the earth, or he is in this fracas up to his eyeballs. I don't know which. The reason I say that is because I know for a fact that with all those lawyers up there in Washington, D.C. that surround him,
yeah,
including the U.S. Department of Justice lawyers, I find it impossible as hell that somebody didn't tell him, look, you have the evidence. Take it to a grand jury. There is no higher authority.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't done it.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm not having a whole heck of a lot of remorse or discontent about Donald Trump leaving. My remorse is what's coming in.
Here, here.
Here, here.
And, yeah, I think even people inclined towards a more left perspective might be persuaded to agree that Mr. Biden is less than optimal. I would suggest that maybe we can do a complete, if we get our own trial jury going in response to Paul's complaint before our court, maybe we could suggest that not only is, that both candidates are not qualified, that there's got to be somebody else that is a third option available here that wasn't even presented to the Electoral College. The Electoral College was manipulated by the corrupted leadership of both the Democrats and the Republicans, artificially constrained to only two options, and our jury of electors, constituents, would have authority under the Seventh Amendment, that's extremely powerful, to suggest a third option, whoever we might decide on, for being more appropriate to fill the chief executive office there. Just thinking out loud.
May I add a little on this one, just Chris?
Yeah, Chris.
Well, it's my studied opinion from being highly concerned about Mr. Trump from before the election took place and the fact that there were, as I recall, it's either 23 or 26 imposter conservatives running for the office back then, and he was probably the least political of the rest of them, although I'll assure you that contracting in New York City is definitely political. However, his being surrounded, and I'm not sure who was providing his counsel and picking the people and recommending them for positions like the DOJ and the FBI and other higher positions of authority, but I'm pretty sure they weren't his true friends, and they may have had alternative agendas, and my best observation, and that made it very, very dangerous for Mr. Trump, and being warred at with illegal warfare from the opposition side and many members of the Republican side. I think he was more of a liberal than he was a rhino or a Republican, as the case may be. Certainly did not go unnoticed by some of us that were paying close attention. Nevertheless, he seems to have been beaten down, and being in a similar situation myself, I can assure you that being warred at in violation of Ex parte Milligan for many years can take a toll on your psyche ability and your physical strength and your resolve to carry on, although the only other option we have other than carrying on is laying down and letting them to roll over and have their way with us. And I think I'll continue to fight before and defend myself with all that I have until I can't do it anymore, because I would rather die on my feet than on my knees. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris.
Charles, if I may.
Cynthia, go ahead.
I know you want to move on. I'll make this quick. I have watched God work miracles. And, you know, this is a very unique situation. This is a very intense situation. Let me tell you, I used to own a business with my ex-husband. I found out on a Wednesday, I found out on a Monday morning that I was getting divorced. Thursday, I'm pulling up to his attorney's office, and because I had no time, I got totally blindsided. I'm sitting in the car praying, and I'm like, Lord, I don't have an attorney. I don't know what to do. And he said, you have the greatest counsel in me, and that's all the counsel you need. And let me tell you something. It's, we had a business, a home, and everything. Monday morning, found out. Thursday, we're signing the papers. And I did pretty good. I haven't worked in 5 years. My point is that I believe one of the reasons why we're in the predicament we're in is because too many people have put their faith in Trump. Trump is our only hope, is what I keep hearing. Where I know that God, the true God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, is our only hope. He is our judge. He is our court. And if we don't give him his opportunity, when are we ever going to become we the people once again? This is a very serious situation. But if justice be served, it needs to be God is our judge and God is our leader throughout this. It just came over my heart. Y'all do with that what you want. Thought, food for thought, and I yield.
Thank you, Cynthia. That's a nice testimony there.
Charles, if I may?
Lewis, yes.
It's about 5 minutes till, or about 6 minutes till. Typically, I know that you like to give those that aren't on the call, or either first-timers or aren't on the call often, an opportunity to speak. It appears that the woman that Nikki invited onto the call is no longer here, but we do have a couple of others. I see we have Emma of Michigan. I see we have Kamala of Michigan. I see David of Michigan has joined us as well. Before we conclude, or at least the business portion of our call, which will happen in the next 5 minutes, would either of you like to contribute to anything that has been stated today? Unmute yourself, *6 to unmute, and you've got the floor. Anyone? Okay. Hearing none, Charles, I yield.
Thank you, Lewis. And I think we will put this agenda item concerning vote fraud and the accompanying concerns with the grand juries.
I'm sorry, this is David. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Charles. I just wanted to apologize for being late coming in and say hello, Emma, and hello, Kamala. So that's all I needed to say. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Good to hear your voice. And I'm glad Emma and Kamala are here, too. I think we can put the issues of the vote fraud and the accompanying grand jury concerns on our agenda again to revisit for next week. And if Michael doesn't want to be lead on that, then Paul can. I think Paul is stepping up real nicely there. And I want to thank him for that. But we'll put a wrap on that for now. I would like to take just a moment here, Lewis, to cover the other issues in Section 2 here. We're obviously not going to get to Item 3 here. Or 2C is the various offices of that Michael suggested in our last conference that we form. In item 2C here, I expanded that to include common law offices as well as the offices that are probably more comfortable to the normies out there that Michael specified. Is there any nominations for any of these grassroots community offices would like to present in the conference here as we conclude? Hearing none, and I think we covered 2D, news items of national interest. I think we already covered that pretty good. Anything else from anybody, news items of national interest real quick? Hearing none.
Yeah, I have something I'd like to bring.
Michael?
It was reported Friday in the New York Times, in a tiny little article at the bottom left on 12, A12, I believe, that 6,200 troops have been requested by the Pentagon to arrive in Washington by Monday. I just find that very interesting. And Trump is choosing his words very carefully. He has not conceded. Many think he has. Many imagine that he has. But he has only stated that he would not attend an inauguration for Joe Biden. So I don't know. I think we just need to wait and see. I'm not prepared to believe that he's, you know, thrown in the towel and ended it. You know, he did file the 2018 executive order regarding foreign entanglement in our election and the involving the Insurrection Act. So I think it's possible that he might act still. I'm not sure. I think the jury's still out. And that's an interesting fact. 6,200 troops in Washington, D.C. by Monday. So I yield. That's it.
Thank you, Michael. That is interesting. I think we should try to wind up our business meeting here. Are there any other cases that anyone would like to bring before our court? Hearing none. And you all can contact me personally if you want to get on the agenda with new cases or anything like that. I do believe our clock is running for our business meeting here. I'm going to abort my presentation in Section 3. I'll probably do that in our next conference, hopefully our main business meeting will not be so intensely energized as to take up an hour and 45 minutes of our discussion on one agenda item there. That was a good, healthy discussion. I think we got over a hump there, and we're kind of on the downhill side now. But at that point, I do believe that we should call an end here to our formal business meeting. We will continue with open discussion here after we close our business meeting here. But at this point, I am Charles Stewart. This is January the 9th, 2001, and the formal business meeting of our Supreme Court of Law and accompanying phone conference is hereby concluded. Bang, bang. Continuing on, I guess, open discussion. Anybody? I'm kind of, my mind is a little bit blank here. Does anyone have any comments or questions in where they would like the discussion to go next and revisit issues or bring new ones? Anybody?
This is David, Michigan. I was just wondering if there's been any new news on the blue gold, the water, I've come in late. I don't know if Gilberti has been on at all, or if anybody's got an update to that. I yield.
Michael?
Nothing specific yet, David. With the holidays and the emergency in D.C., everything has kind of become stagnated. We are planning some presentations here in South Florida in the very near future. We had to cancel one that was last Wednesday. It coincided simultaneously with the elector vote, so we chose to cancel that. We were on the roster, though, for the Manatee County legislative delegation with two of our senators and two of our representatives, but we have a full plate down here. There's a lot of activity regarding water and pollution of the water. It's a real triggering issue down here that we hope to get traction with assembling and with court action, hopefully. Time will tell. We're just going to have to wait and see. But we've got an upcoming meeting with the Mosaic Company, the billion-dollar corporation that is destroying the water aquifer in Florida and the central and southern south central area of the land, and we're going to be having a workshop with them and hopefully capture some good video and confront them in assembling at the county commission meeting. So I'll definitely keep you guys posted. I yield. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the update.
Thank you both. I would like to do a dry run, so to speak, on the issues that I was presenting in agenda item 3.
Oh, I am.
Is there somebody else trying to talk here? Okay. There's a web link in agenda item 3 that references a quote by William Blackstone. And I'd like to read it real quick. It's from the foot. It's not by William Blackstone. It's by the William Casey that was an editor in a republication of the Commentaries on the Laws of England by William Blackstone. And one of his footnotes here I find extremely powering. Those that think that we don't have any real power might want to take some instruction from this. The footnote in the text that Mr. Casey wrote in Mr. Blackstone's Commentaries on the Laws of England, obviously published quite a bit later, I think it was 1913, when Mr. Casey published this footnote. But it's a very empowering gem of a footnote. And it is one of the web links there in Agenda Item 3 can pull up, defines the meaning of a right. And like we were talking with about Paul Nally, stating that he's got evidence of basically a complaint before a court that the rights of everybody, that Paul refers to us as shareholders on the board of directors of the Corporation of the United States of America in two different forms or something like that. We the people have rights collectively, and anybody can move in to the vacuum to begin asserting our collective rights, even if it's not us as individuals that are harmed. If we know of somebody that has been harmed, that has confidence in us to move forward, then we can move forward with the authority of the interests of justice for the people there to articulate the right before the court. And this goes to the issue of rights, as the footnote brings out. And it says, as it defines the meaning of a right, and Mr. Casey goes on to explain here his summary, obviously a major law scholar that published an edition of the Mr. Blackstone's Commentaries on the Laws of England. Mr. Casey goes on to say, meaning of a right, says, jurisprudence is specifically concerned only with such rights as are recognized by law and enforced by the power of the state, period. Okay? Rights that are recognized by law and capable of being enforced by the power of the state. We may therefore define a legal right in what we shall hereafter see is the strictest sense of that term as a capacity residing in one man of controlling with the assent and assistance of the state the actions of others. So this means that all of the public servants are others here, and that any one man, when he has a right on the table that he's articulating before a court of jurisprudence, that he has the right to get that court to enforce any legitimate judgments that he has sought before that court and against the corrupted public servant or corporate executive, and thereby to control the actions of those corrupted public servants or corporate executives, including removing them from office and perhaps even throwing them in jail. This is what rights through the courts are concerned about. Now, you can get off into legislative jurisdiction talking about what rights are, but please note Mr. Casey here is focusing clearly on jurisprudence is specifically concerned only with such rights as are recognized by law. That phrase in context, recognized by law, that means common law. That don't mean statutory municipal codes. Okay? So these are well-settled traditions that are coming through in little footnotes like this, if you have eyes to see. Michael was talking about the footnotes in the back of the paper, talking about 60,000 troops. It's important to look at the small details that make it into print, because frequently that's how the bad guys hide the most powerful information. And I'd like to conclude from this specific site here. That which gives validity to a legal right, and this goes to Michael, we're talking about enforcement and stuff, that which gives validity to a legal right is, in every case, the force which is lent to it by the state. See, we've got the obligation and the duty and the right to invoke judicial process to bring forth enforcement of our rights when we're properly stating a complaint before a court. And there's so much power right here at our fingertips that I get just a smidgen frustrated when there's people that don't want us to access that immediate, very empowering process that God wants us to access. God hates the evil that is destroying our American nation right now, and God wants us to use His laws, as established in the Bible and preserved through common law tradition, to bring forth justice on this earth. And I do believe God gets frustrated with us when we find excuses not to do that. So anyway, I just wanted to conclude on that point that we've got splendid opportunity before us, but please try to be optimistic about the empowerment that's available before us and how that we have the capabilities of getting in this newly configured vehicle and driving it down the road in manners that are only that are socially responsible but also very powerful in affecting the political and social environment around us. So I wanted to at least prime for, I'll try to do that full presentation in next week's conference. But at this point, I yield the floor for comments or questions on this or anything else.
It's Michael in Florida. I have a comment regarding what I just heard on Lou Dobbs. I just heard a speech by Trump that I've never seen or heard. It must have been done today. He definitely has conceded, to my great sadness. But it is what it is. And Mr. Biden is now calling Trump's supporters domestic terrorists. And Josh Hawley, Senator Josh Hawley, was the very first senator, I believe, to object. He had a book contract with Simon & Schuster during this whole debacle, and because of his position to represent his constituents properly, Simon & Schuster has now pulled his contract. Hopefully he'll sue them. But what we're witnessing is a fascist state being born. We're witnessing big tech companies deplatforming the president of the United States on multiple platforms. They are denying payment services through different platforms to targeted social media platforms that are hostile to their policies. You know, this couldn't be more obvious and more dangerous than we've ever seen it. So you must be prepared if you're going to venture in this vehicle that you spoke of in new terrain, uncharted territory. You're going to have to expect major problems. And I don't know that the American people are worth my imprisonment for trying to represent them. That's why I would like to try to prolong any strategy that potentially could get us in trouble for as far away as possible. Well, I think we should... go ahead. You seem to want to respond. Go ahead.
Well, if you're not comfortable assuming leadership in direct confrontation against the corrupted powers that be that you're you're complaining about, Michael. Other people are more courageous. That's okay.
No, that's an inaccurate representation of what I said. I'm not saying I don't want to confront them. That's the mistake you made. I'm not saying that. It's the strategy we use to confront them. You know, enforcement is the key issue here. You know, we could spend, you know, all our energy and merit and have volumes of evidence to indict and condemn the corruption and find the criminals and condemn them with judgment and pass judgment and pass a sentence. But we have no sentencing power. And if we attempt it at this time, and probably more so in the very near future, even talking about it would probably be misconstrued as conspiring to kidnap, you know, public officials or government officials.
If I may.
So I'm just advising, you know, very walk gently and use much discernment and wisdom in any discussion of future actions. That's all. I yield. Yeah, go ahead.
I do think that we're proceeding wisely and with all appropriate caution, but it seems like your general agenda, Michael, here is to rely on the de facto courts, and a lot of us are so frustrated seriously with the constantly dwindling possibilities of any real justice out of the de facto courts. That there's a lot of people in this conference that seem way more mentally clear than yourself, there, sir. That we need to be doing something from our own forum here, because the chances of any real justice from the de factos is absolutely abysmal, and we're not paranoid about any remote possibility that we're going to get railroaded off into jail or something like that, merely because we're standing up and speaking out in the cause of justice. That should not be a serious concern for godly, righteous people, Brother Michael.
May I?
Paul, please.
Thank you, Charles. I would like to bring everyone's, when they're thinking about the Supreme Court of Law as a organization of members of the Board of Directors, I would like for you to consider carefully the First Amendment, which says, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Those two phrases do not tell us how we're supposed to do that. So if we come together as an assemblage of free men and women, we sit down and we talk to one another, or we present a case to the others, and they make a decision, and then they issue an order to a grand jury or to a government prosecutor to take some action, they are doing precisely what the Constitution says they can do, peaceably assembling and then petitioning the government. And I yield, and I think I better go to bed.
If I may, I'd like to respond.
Michael, yes.
Yeah, I would agree with everything he just said, and you continue, Charles, to misinterpret my words, and I don't know why that is. I am not opposed in attempting redress. I am not opposed to making the government hear our complaint. That has never been my point nor my fear, okay? It is the enforcement aspect of your proposal that I fear would lead to problems and arrest of those participating. If you go beyond what is prescribed by law in this current state of affairs in America, I am all for assembling, as Paul just described, The First Amendment does not tell us how we are to assemble or what we are to do when we do assemble. I know in the state of Florida, it tells me I am to assemble so that I may instruct my representatives in the state of Florida. My representatives start at the grassroots precinct level, school board level, all the way to senator and governor. And I am all for assembling and providing the consent of the governed and providing a viewpoint that we can demand redress. But it's the enforcement aspect of your proposal that I have objections with, not entirely, but I do have concerns and objections as to how or could we enforce any judgment that we would render. And
can I respond to that?
Yeah, is Paul still on?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Paul, I just want to say good night, and I appreciate your words. That's all.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Thank you, Paul. If I might respond, Michael, I my discussion of enforcement and things and Jehovah of Armies, issues like that, is just to outline the empowerment that's at our fingertips. It's not something that I'm lusting to invoke immediately. Perhaps I did not make myself clear. The jury, unanimous 12, unanimously, as reflective of the conscience of the community, with no dissent from anybody that has qualified elector status in the whole USA, would be necessary. 12 unanimous people reflecting the conscience of the community of the whole USA would be necessary before we would even talk about invoking any enforcement. And I kind of thought I'd made that clear to you, but I don't. It sounds like you thought I'm lusting for enforcement more promptly than that. I do believe how I've just stated how the enforcement would only be enforced through the unanimous agreement of all 12 jurors is adequate safeguards for your concerns here, Brother Michael. I yield.
I never put a time constraint on your enforcement policies or ideas. Never said that. To pursue an end result or a strategy that whose end and result would lead to a designated enforcement and judgment, to spend all that time and energy and then achieve it and then be facing, arrest.
Wait. Once we've got the judgment, way before we talk about enforcement, the jury does a preliminary verdict that we've got a judgment here and that arrests are appropriate. And we're not talking about issuing arrest warrants. Okay?
Okay, but I have heard you talk about that. And let's just do a hypothetical. I just want to get clarity here. Let's
that
say
be
we
nice.
Do what you're proposing. We have a hearing. We have a jury trial. We find that, let's say, some governor in some particular state has violated the people's rights and is guilty of treason. And all 12 jury members have agreed that he's guilty, and the jury that you're proposing, hypothetically, wants judgment and enforcement. So then what? Tell me what
the jury decides. The jury decides on the wording of any arrest warrant that'll issue, or even if an arrest warrant will issue, it would be within the jury's power to then certify their jury verdict and take it to a de facto court and ask the de facto court to cause the FBI or the U.S. Marshals or state police to come in, or even a county sheriff or something. We could go through the machinery of the de facto government after we got our jury verdict. We don't have to rely on our own posse comitatus police officers here.
Either way, let's say the FBI refuses to respond to you. They are silent. The crickets. We hear no response from the FBI or any agency or court from the United States government. What is your next step?
Well, in my notice requesting their assistance, we also include therein a paragraph stating that if you do not provide us with assistance of enforcement here, then we will then we intend to move in the vacuum, or to explore the possibility of moving in the vacuum, but we don't want to do that if that's going to lead to conflict on the street between our peace officers and yours. So please object within 30 days to our proposition that we do have the right to issue enforcement of the arrest of such-and-so corrupted governor duly convicted of a felony. And if you have any such objections, please notify us within 30 days. Otherwise, we will presume that you have no objection and that you guys are going to stand down when our peace officers attempt to execute the arrest warrants. Thank you. Have a nice day.
Okay, and you would do this through town constables? Is that your concept?
If the de factos are obstructing the access to the enforcement arm that is the necessary ingredient in full administration of justice, yeah.
If I may.
Okay, I'll yield temporarily to Paul. Go ahead, Paul.
May I remind you that any group of citizens have the capability of calling out the unorganized militia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and we could be pumping that before we're concerned about executing the arrest warrant. If we've got a nice big crowd there, you saw what happened in Washington, D.C. The cops just peed their pants and let everybody in. They'll probably do the same thing if we've got a similar situation going, only more chips are on the table where we're actually going to take control of a governor's office.
Charles, if I may, I don't think peeing their pants was an honest or accurate representation.
What do you think those police officers did there, Michael? They opened the doors.
Yeah, they let the people in. I believe it was a false flag intended to discredit and destroy any credibility in the Patriot movement, which they did successfully.
And it intimidated any holdouts in Congress. I mean, that whole Congress tucked their tails and ran.
Yeah, it was a psyop.
Yeah, it was.
Absolutely.
That is a classic P.T. Barnum production.
Yeah.
If I can contribute, you could hear something was wrong in Pence's voice when they were trying to get the law straight on what was going to take place. You could hear it in his voice. Something was wrong. I yield.
That's always a good idea to pay attention to tonal inflections.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And there are many videos surfacing. Matter of fact, just last night, Rudy Giuliani put together an assembly of videos, clips from various sources identifying Antifa actors.
Yeah.
And with all of their equipment on display, their spray cans of tear gas, their Molotov cocktails that were found when several of them got arrested. Their black helmets, their backpacks, their similar attire. There was even a photograph of one of these Antifa guys with his skateboard on the back of his backpack, which they were notorious for in L.A. and all these other protests back in the summer when they were burning America. And the video was spectacular, and he put forth a case in this video last night that was just phenomenal. It was a marvelous presentation of evidence. And by this morning, YouTube had deleted the video in violation of community standards. And it was the most gentle presentation of evidence without any, excessive commentary or accusations. It was just the evidence, and yet they deleted it. Unbelievable.
One more time. Good night, y'all.
Good night.
Good night, Paul. Brother Michael, point well taken, but we've got bigger issues than the censorship by YouTube and Facebook and stuff like that. I'd like to focus on Giuliani himself. I didn't have it clear in my mind in previous discussions about Giuliani that he was the mayor of New York City when the 911 September 11th disaster happened there.
Yes, sir. He sure was.
Yeah, and he's got dirt on his hands about that whole evil conspiracy.
He's got mud on his hands.
Yeah. It's nasty.
And it's still wet.
Yeah. And it's a real bad earmarking that Mr. Trump is using Mr. Giuliani as his legal counsel when Giuliani is obviously, in my mind, he's a devil worshiper. He's part of the problem.
Well, as of a half hour ago when I heard Trump give his new concession speech, I am persuaded that he was a puppet acting out his play.
Trump's a puppet?
Play. Yeah,
You've concluded Trump is a puppet?
Yeah, I was holding out that he might, engage the 2018 executive order insurrection, but he's not. He's going to concede, and I believe he was set up to do this.
Thank you. I know it's painful to come to realizations like that, but I thank you for your integrity and in following the evidence.
I only made the decision a half hour ago. When I heard him give that new speech, and it was brief, and he was clear, I was waiting for that. I was holding out, giving him the benefit of the doubt one last time. Because in the very beginning, I even kept saying, when he gave that speech about the snake, I don't know if you remember that speech that he talked about, the woman who let the snake in, and then the snake...
Yeah.
Came back and bit her, and the snake told the woman, you knew I was a snake, and you took me in. Well, that's us. That's we the people. We the people are the woman that took the snake in.
Thank you. Excellent parallel. Trump is a snake. I'm glad.
He told us.
Huh?
He told us in the very beginning, and that statement that he gave, that I think it's a nursery rhyme or an old school tale or something about the woman.
It's an old
poem.
It's a very old poem.
Yeah.
So he told us the truth.
Well, there you have it. I'm glad good conservative people like you are recognizing, willing to recognize the evidence. This is the beauty of honorable people recognizing the common law tradition of recognizing evidence. And when the evidence becomes overwhelming to the point where there is probable cause to form the belief that we've been screwed, that we've been deceived by forked-tongued deceivers, then we can arrive at righteous conclusions before God. No pain, no gain, Michael, but I'm glad you're... We got a consensus on that point now.
You just spoke mounds there in that all the evidence has to be considered. And that is what has not been done through this process. And I have said from the start, this is not about Trump. This is not about Biden. This is about we the people. Trump did not have this election stolen from him. We the people had it stolen from us. That's my upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Further evidence the additional evidence that we will see in the near future to put the icing on the cake is if he fails to pardon Julian Assange and Edward Snowden, because he heralded during the campaign, he claimed both men, were heroes, and
they were standing up for freedom and free speech, especially Julian Assange. I know at one point early on he criticized Julian, but he had a change of heart completely, and he claimed that he was a hero, but yet he still hasn't pardoned him. So, and he also hasn't released the CIA files on JFK that he promised to do. He also did not end the the amendment or the law
Jefferson
regarding
Accord.
What is it?
Jefferson Accord. Was that it?
No. He didn't end the law that forbid churches from speaking out on political campaigns. What was that? The Johnson Amendment. He failed to eliminate the Johnson Amendment. He said specifically in his campaign that he would end and eliminate the Johnson Amendment, and he never did it. And he only built 400 miles of the wall, which is nothing. So those are the facts glaring at us that we need to judge in regard to Trump's credibility or not.
Yeah. Well, if I might, thank you again, both Michael and Cindy. The bigger problem, I think, is the electoral process is fundamentally flawed, especially the primary flaw is the dominance by the corrupted leadership of both the Democrat and the Republican parties. The leadership of the Democrat Party and the leadership of the Republican Party are working together. They both worship and bow before the same devil, and they're doing a divide and conquer strategy on we the people. And
absolutely.
Thank you. And unless this is why we need to be having votes of confidence in our own qualified electors and county stewards or whatever any of us wish to call them. We need to be percolating upwards the people that have the courage to stand up and speak out and promote godly righteous truth and justice for our American people and put them in positions of leaderships so that they can be spokespersons for each of our separate communities. And then once we have an assembly of spokespeople for the larger community, all have proper delegation of authority from each of their constituencies, and then we've got a general assembly of fully empowered constituent elector representatives like that, then we are in a position to go eyeball to eyeball with any such government as we may have justification to confront in any such tribunal, assembly, the Supreme Court of the USA, the U.S. Senate, House of Representatives, any state senator, things like that, county commissioners, all the way up or down the hierarchy. The process remains the same. If we are the voice of the people and we have our own constituency backing up and saying, yeah, I trust jurist number 7 there, he's my delegate. If we've got the organic community built together that speaks in harmony, speaks with a single voice. See, they're majority rule. They don't speak with a single voice. That's the nature of the Roman municipal form of government. Christian common law has a single voice, a righteous, godly voice that comes through with no dissenting opinions because we already hammered it out in our consensus building process. When we go before the enemy, we already got our script written, and our spokesperson is not going to deviate from that script. We've got a lot of empowerment. I yield.
How many's on right now? Is there 3 now left?
Counting us, there's 5, I see. Emma Hammond is on still. Emma, do you feel like commenting at all? We haven't heard your voice here. I know you've got a lot of experience there. Please, Can you say a few words to us? Emma, are you there? Are you muted? Well, maybe she's distracted a little bit or something. And it looks like Kamala, also from Michigan and Lewis's conferences, is here. Kamala, would you like to say a few words to the group here?
No, thanks. I was just listening in, and actually I kind of dozed off for a minute, for just like 5 minutes, but then I woke up and I didn't know what we were talking about. So, but the call itself is really good. So I'm just listening in.
Okay, well, thank you for participating here, Kamala.
Thank you.
Who else is on?
Well, just Kamala and Emma and you and Cindy and me. It's the five of us. There's a lot going on. And it wouldn't break my heart if we put a wrap on it. Or what are you thinking, Michael? Should we?
Yeah, that's okay. Huh? It was a good call. I think it was a good call. And I think we're at the appropriate time to end it and say good night and look forward to it next week.
Yeah. All right. Is there any objection from anybody else in attendance to us concluding the call at this point? Hearing none, I am Charles Stewart. This is the Conference of the Supreme Court of Law for the USA, such as we be. This date is January the 9th, 2021. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening, Charles.
Mm-hmm.
Good night, Charles.
Good night, Cynthia.
Good night.
Come on.